Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reddy Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
Ladies and gentlemen, at the start of the fourth round, Gordon Player having retired, the winner, Michael Carew.
By Kinsler, Quinn heads on. Oh, surely this time for Keane. And Ireland do it. Robbie Keane.
Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning to you. I'm Ken Doherty.
And I'm Reggie Corrigan.
And welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Yes, you're back. We are all back. Hooray! No? Okay, yeah. Just me. Just I'm excited about it. The papers could be long this morning. As we've lots of things to talk about. Peter Breen is in the studio with us. He has a wonderful interview with Keane O'Connor. That's just coming up after 10. Liam Blanche from Boyle Sports will be along to mark our cards for the weekend. We could all deal with a few winners. And a new section called Sporting Memory, kicking off with Paki Save in Italia 90, just after 10 years. So we'd like to hear from you. Give us your... sort of, where were you when that save? What's your memories of Italia 90 and, of course, that famous save? We'd love to hear from you. Rugby section, of course, with Reg and Peter, getting the current state of affairs across the provinces. GAA with Declan Drake, and it's looking like Christmas all Ireland. And we get Declan's thoughts on that. And Alan Cawley will be on to talk all about football, of course, on the home front and on the international front. So stay with us for the next couple of hours, right up until 11 o'clock. And as usual, you can get in touch with the show on 087-55-777. We have a wonderful competition as well for you this week. We're giving a four ball away to the wonderful golf club out in Paris Court. It has an east and west course, beautiful surroundings, and they've kindly donated a four ball with bogeys, and all you have to do is answer a very simple question. In which month is the Augusta Masters this year? Okay, in which month is the Augusta? Normally takes place in April, but it's coming up soon, and we want to know which month it is, and we'll go into a hat and we'll call out the winners just before 11 o'clock for a four ball with two bogeys in the wonderful Paris Court Golf Club in Wicklow. Okay, as we said, there's a team running through the show about Italia 90 and Paki Bonner's famous save. Where were you? And the lads in the studio, Peter Breen is with us, but Reggie is with us as well. And Reggie, you've got a great story. You were telling us a little bit. Where were you? You've got some memories of Italia 90.
Well, I have. It was a great time, but it was... in my youth, obviously, I'm on a J1 in America when that Italia 90 was on. I was over in LA, but trying to find anywhere to watch the match, of course, in Los Angeles, football, soccer, as they call it over there in 1990, there wasn't a sign of it anywhere, and we traipsed the length and breadth of LA. But I tell you, I wasn't living in the nicest part of LA, no, certainly wasn't up in Bel Air or up in the Hollywood Hills or anything like that. I was, you've heard of Compton, I'm sure, from the movies and everything else. Well, I was pretty much living in the middle of all of that, a paddy in the middle of all of that, so it was an interesting spot. So going around, I went into an Irish bar and there was a Mexican guy behind the counter, and he was kind of the barman, and there weren't too many Irish lads in the Irish bar, I can tell you that for nothing. So when I started asking him about watching the match, there was no chance whatsoever. So we ended up, myself and the other couple of lads that we were with, listening to the entire penalties part of that match over the phone from a call box in LA. We rang home just around the time that it was on, towards the end, to try and get the result, and we were told it's going to penalties, and we listened to the penalty shootout in a phone box on the side of the street in LA. And the save was just as good then.
Well, we just got some breaking, very, very sad news, talking about Italia 90, that Jack Charlton, who of course was the manager of that wonderful team in 1990 and of course 1994, has passed away. He was 85 years of age, so that's very, very
incredibly
sad news.
Okay, well, someone who was adopted by this country and loved throughout the length and breadth of Ireland, you know, there'll be a lot of people with memories like myself that they'd cherish forevermore who will be very disappointed and sad to hear that news. Very sad news.
We were all upbeat about this coming back after so many months away, and It's very sad to hear that news. What a great man. Peter, you must have met Jack Charlton over the years.
I did. I had a great pleasure. When I was in university in UCD, I was the sports editor of the University Observer, and Jack Charlton was honoured. He was brought in. And I remember he spoke to, you know, an audience, as you can appreciate, it was a packed theatre hall, and afterwards I managed to get a few words with him. And it was around the time his mother, Sissy, had died, and Sissy had played a massive role in himself and Bobby's career and in their lives, obviously enough, and they were very, very close to her. And when we got chatting to her, he actually started crying, he started welling up, and that probably told me a little bit about him. But over the lockdown period, I saw an amazing film on Sky, called The Keeper. It's about Bert Trautmann, that great German keeper. Oh, yeah. And it really, his impact transcended football, because what he did for Anglo-German relations coming out of World War II, he'd actually fought in World War II for Germany, and it suggests people watch it. But I think what Jack Charlton did for Anglo-Irish relations, particularly coming out of an era when you know, there were so many bombings going on in the 80s and 90s, when there was such tension between the two states. And what he helped bring to Irish, not just like where we're based now in Castle Forbes House, we can look out the IFSC is a little bit down the quays, we can see the progress that the Irish nation made. And Jack Charlton was a major part in that feel good factor, and he was an extraordinary manager. I think this would be a very poignant time, not just for fans, but for a lot of his players. I know a lot of them, I'd in my previous role working with UEFA, chatting to Ray Houghton, and I know a lot of players had gone out and visited him over the last period because he hadn't been well. But that's a very sad day, and he'll be remembered very fondly, I think, both here and in England as well, as a World Cup winner.
Yeah, I remember when the team came back, you know, after the heroics of 1990, and they came down to College Green, and I went down there, you know, and the crowd, just to welcome them in, they came in the open top bus, and there must have been about 500,000 people around, you know, College Green, O'Connell Street, and the atmosphere was just electric. And I mean, what a wonderful welcome home they got. He became like almost, you know, as you said, an Irishman, and you know, a hero to the Irish people. And of course, the way, you know, he sort of he presented himself as well. He was just Jack Charlton. He was a real, you know, just
down
an ordinary,
down to earth
man. Lovely, lovely man. I invited him to the World Championships, and he wanted to come. I met him out at one of the matches in the Aviva. I went over to see him. He was still a little bit, you know, this is a few years ago, but he still had his senses, and he was still in good health. And I asked him would he like to come to the World Championship, because he was always asking me how the snooker was going. I wanted to invite him, and he said, yeah. He says, I'll come along with the wife, you know. But unfortunately, he never got a chance to come along.
Yeah, well, that's
rest him. 85, he had a good innings, but it's still sad, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
very
it's,
sad.
And it's,
Reggie, you must have met him over the years, have you?
I only met him once over the years at a function like that. And, he, you know, again, just, you were struck, but he had a presence about him.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
He really had, you know, he was big man, tall man, and, you know, getting older in years or whatever, but he still had a presence about him, no question about it. And just a normal, polite conversation, you know. It was just the usual, how are you, and everything else. And I did what every Irish person does and thanked him for giving us many years of enjoyment, hanging out of a phone box in LA listening to a penalty shootout. But they're the stories that so many Irish have, and the fans have. And like, he's immortalised in the Christy Moore song, and Jocks Are Going to Stuttgart, and all those types of things. So I mean, he's a part of Irish football in the way that you know, the green jersey itself is. I mean, you can't mention those golden years, as we like to look back on them, without his name coming into it. So lovely man. Pleasure to meet him once upon a time, but very sad day.
Yeah, very sad day. Well, that's put a bit of downer on you know, we're all excited about coming in now, and of course, talking about Packy Bonner's save. I mean, I was in Redler watching it. I don't know where you were, but we had Charlie Big Times here in Los Angeles.
I was in LA on a J1, walking the streets trying to find a job. I lost about 3 stone, didn't have anything to eat. The heat was unreal. I was working the graveyard shift from 6 in the evening until 4 in the morning, driving a forklift in the trucking company. It wasn't exactly the glamour life.
You were jumping up on
biscuit tins trying to reach the table, playing with the snooker.
That's true.
None of the glamour that you had, swanning off your snooker championships. But we got through it. I can tell you.
What's your memories of Italia 90? I mean,
Italia 90, I was 10 years old.
Of course you were.
I watched it at home. And No, but like I watched it at home, and I suppose football only really resonated for me from the 1986 FA Cup final when Liverpool beat Everton, and everything since then. And obviously Ireland had a great period during that time at Euro 88, so Italia 90 was the first one that really mattered. It was a very poor World Cup overall, though, you know, if you remember. And you know, there was no real outstanding team. The Ireland-England game was incredible.
No one remembers that, Peter. They only remember the save.
But George Hamilton as well, Irish nation owes a great debt to him because he captured a perfect.
Oh, brilliant,
And even the Jack Charlton, you know, the grimace to the camera just beforehand because the camera is obviously right in his face.
Yeah.
So all those little things. But my father had gone, and Dad was a sports nut, and he went, he was at Italia 90. He was at all those bun fights over the years, and Euro 88 and everything. He was up in Winter Park when, you know, when no fans were allowed up, when Alan McLaughlin scored the equaliser that day. So I remember he was there, and thankfully he came home because I don't know, there is a story that a lot of people never came home either from.
I
couldn't get much better. It was a special time.
You know, I mean, everybody would remember the save, but then, like, David O'Leary, he had to step up and get the penalty, you know. And I was talking to my friend Pat there the other night, and he was saying, yeah, everybody remembers the save, but you had to give Dave O'Leary a bit of credit for scoring the goal. Yeah. But he doesn't seem to get the same credit, does he? Like, as Paddy Bonner, you know, because he scored
that. I suppose you're expected to score the penalty. That's the reason why it's a big thing to save it. But yeah, he deserves massive credit.
And what a penalty it was.
It was. He struck it really well.
Yeah.
He did really well. But sure, look, we'll go into it in detail later on.
But when you see a defender coming up to take a penalty, everybody
was nervous. No doubt about
it. Where's all the forwards and the midfielders?
I think that's why Jack's face was the way it was. He knew what was in the bank to take the last penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, in the papers today, Ken, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say. There's a great piece in the Daily Mail on Alex Higgins, and they were just kind of outlining he was a flawed genius. He had a lot of struggles, and I know you've got great anecdotes every now and then about him. But how do you assess him and his life? You never want to speak ill of the dead, but how would you describe him?
Well, when I first saw him play, I mean, I was 8, and I saw him play on Pop Black. Pop Black was a program that used to come on BBC every Thursday night, and they used to squeeze it was two 1-frame matches, and they used to squeeze it into like a half an hour program. And it was the first time I'd seen Alex Higgins play. We had a black and white television at home, you know, and actually Ted Lowe famously commented, for those of you watching in black and white, the brown is next to the blue. That was one of his gaps. That was whispering Ted Lowe. But Alex Higgins, that was when I first saw Alex Higgins. When I met Alex Higgins, it was the first time. I was 14 down in Goffs. I got a job as an usher, you know, and it was just to see the snooker, to sometimes get to meet some of the players. You had Ray Reardon, Spencer, but then you had Davis and Higgins and young Jimmy White, Kick Stevens and stuff like that. And I was taking tickets off people and just ushering them into the seats. But I was basically watching the snooker all the time. But I met Alex Higgins for the first time. And the first words he said to me was, will you get me a drink, you know, when I'm at the table? I said, yes, Mr. Higgins, what would you like? He says, well, he goes, if I ask you for an orange juice, that means a vodka and orange juice. I said, when you're playing? He says, yes. And I says, if I ask you for a vodka and orange juice, that means a double. So this was my hero. And then when I played him, of course, I was the last player to play him at the Crucible.
Yeah.
And that was... like, I beat him, he never played there again, and it was sort of one of those experiences that I didn't really like at all, you know what I mean, because we became good friends, and Jimmy White and I and the snooker players, we carried his coffin up in Belfast, and the funny thing was, like, because he used to back horses all the time, and we're sitting in the back of the hearse, you know, as the horse, it was a horse-drawn carriage right through the centre of Belfast, and all the people had lined the streets and everything. And I said to the boys in the back of the house, I says, how ironic this is. Look, Alex Higgins, even going to his death, he says, he's being drawn by two slow horses. He's been backing slow horses all his life to his detriment, like, you know.
But he was an amazing character, but a tragic figure as well. There's no question about it. I mean, the genius of him on the table. I watched it. There was actually a thing on Twitter there during the week with John Virgo, just showed a clip of him where he potted in a kind of a demo thing where Virgo challenged him, and he potted a pink from an impossible, from one end of the table to the other, down along the length of the cushion, and still got position on the black, and then did an outrageous all around the table pot on the black. just to fit. Oh, sorry, no, it was a one-handed. He one-handed potted the black in the middle pocket, and it was incredible to look. And Virgo just looked at him, threw the cue on the table, and walked off. You know, you can't touch that genius, but he was tragic as well.
He was very flawed. Yeah,
he was flawed. There's no question about it. I'd say there was other things going on there, maybe
that we
didn't even know about.
Yeah,
maybe with you know his mind and things, but on the table,
yeah,
absolute joy.
I think one of the funniest lines that he came out with when I was with him was when I brought him down from Belfast to play in the Irish Professional Championship, and I said, come down and do a little bit of practice, you know, before. So he came out to the snooker room in the Radisson and came in at 10 o'clock in the morning. He'd been sort of recuperating from cancer, half his throat was taken away from the radiation. And so he came in and he had a long coat, the racing post in his pocket. He sat down and I says, what would you like, a cup of tea? Do you want any breakfast? I'll have a pint of Guinness. Yeah. So he had a pint of Guinness. He took out his Rowley cigarettes, his old Holborn. He rolled his own like cigarette.
Yeah.
And he went around the whole room, the snooker room.
Looking at all the pictures.
Yeah. And there's a picture of myself and George Best there. And I said to Alex, Alex is a good old friend of yours from Belfast, you know, and Manchester, because he used to play George Best snooker in Manchester when Best was still playing for United. And he took a swig of the Guinness and he took a drag of the cigarette and he looked at Georgie Best and he goes, oh, Georgie Best, what a waste. Well, I fell around the place laughing, but that was Alex Higgins.
Paul is telling us that we're getting inundated with texts and people's with memories about Jack. And and obviously that did strike a nerve, I think, with a lot of people. And the interesting thing as well, he used to own the Bagot Inn, didn't he? The old Bagot Inn.
Oh, that's right,
you know, back in Dublin. Yeah. So he, and the fact that he was fly fishing all over the country.
Yeah, I was going to say, fishing here all the time. Yeah. I mean, he loved Ireland, absolutely loved it.
Yeah, yeah. So listen, we were going to talk about Packy, where you were. If you've got any memories of Jack Charlton, please send us a text, 087 1155 777. Forget about Packy's save now. It was a great save. But let's talk about Jack Charlton, because the sad news today is, at 85 years of age, World Cup winner, of course, with England in 1966, brother to the great Bobby Charlton as well. And but more importantly for us as Irishmen, became an Irish hero. Not just like in football, but just a general hero to the Irish people, from 88 in Stuttgart to 90 in Italy to even 94 in America. The great Jack Charlton has sadly passed away today, aged 85. If you have any memories of him, send us a text, 087 11 55 777.
Isn't it interesting as well? You know, hopefully Ireland will qualify for Euros later on in the year. It'll be a lovely tribute, and Leeds look like they're going to get promoted as well. So it could be an amazing and a poignant year for them. But look, I think that'll definitely resonate, I think, with a lot of clubs, a lot of people, and his own family as well. And I suppose it'll immortalise a lot of the players, the Niall Quinns and Dave O'Leary's, Paddy Bonners, who would have played under him as well, and he would have given them their first crack at it. And the fact that he was the first real exponent, and we were the beneficiaries of that granny rule, and all the players who came in and repatriated back to Ireland, that was so important as well, wasn't it, in terms of identity and everything. So you're right, he gave us confidence, but he gave us a sense of worth as well internationally. It was very rare Ireland made any kind of progress on the international stage at that time, and he was certainly one of the main reasons for that.
And of course he had that famous phrase, put them under pressure. They made a great song out of it as well, didn't they?
Still going.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Derek Doom.
Yeah, very good. Okay, 087 1155 777. We are giving away a four ball as well to Paris Cork Golf Club with bogeys as well. The simple question is, in what month will the Augusta Masters take place this year? It was supposed to be April, of course, but it's going to take place. Just tell us the month. 087 11 55 777. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to Insure My Van, with Ken and Reggie and Peter here in the studio. We've got lots more coming up after the break. We've got our tipster, Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports, is going to mark our card of some tips and a lucky 15 this weekend. I know a lot of people have been meeting over this period of COVID period. They're all asking, when are you back on the radio? When are you back? When are you coming back with the tips? We need a few tips. So we're going to give you a few tips right after the break. Don't go away. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
It would be appropriate if his 100th putt this week dropped a birdie.
It does. What a finish to McIlroy.
And Gentili goes down, and this
is one very tough lady from Italy. Been 10 rounds a couple of times. Can't cope with Katie Taylor.
Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning and welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. It's a very sad morning this morning. We're all excited about coming back in after being away for such a long break, but we've come back to the sad news that the great Jack Charlton has died aged 85 this morning. Sad news for us all here. Of course, a World Cup winner. But for Irish people, a hero to many for what he did to the Irish team and the success that he brought as well. He'd be sadly missed, but he'd be very fondly remembered. Just spoke to Eamon Dunphy. He's delighted to come on at 10 o'clock just after the news to talk about him. He had his ups and downs with him, but he respected him. There's no doubt about that. So I'm looking forward to having a chat with Eamon Dunphy. So you must stay on for that at the 10 o'clock news. Eamon Dunphy's going to come on exclusively to talk about the great Jack Charlton. Very sad news indeed. Any memories that you might have had of Jack, please send them in 087 11 55 777 and we'll try and get through to them as well. We are running a little competition as well for a four ball kindly donated by Paris Cork Golf Club with buggies and they're going to give it away. Our competition question is, in what month will the Augusta Masters take place before the end of the year? It was, of course, to be in April. So what month? 087 11 55 777 is the number to text. Right now, it's racing, of course, and we're delighted to welcome back Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports joins us on the line now. A very good morning to you, Leon.
Good morning, Ken. Just obviously heard the news this morning. I think the whole country is going to be in shock and sadness. And I was lucky enough to go to a, I think there was an event maybe about a year or 18 months ago down in the K Club, and a lot of those players came back. Even Terry Phelan, I think, flew all the way back from India. It was a night for Jack Charlton, and he was such a legend, wasn't he? I think any kid that loved football in Ireland just remembered Big Jack. 1988, I was 11. And, you know, it just got everyone hook, line and sinker in football. He was just tremendous. Yeah. What a man. And what he done for Ireland as a country. In terms of bringing us out to the world,
absolutely.
I think Jack Charlton had a pivotal role to play in that. So all our thoughts and all our sympathies go to his family at this sad time.
Yeah, very, very sad indeed. Very, very sad indeed. The racing today, Leon, on you know, I know it's great to have you back in any way, and the racing, it's great to have the racing back as well, because one of those, you know, the sports that that came back live, I know without crowds, of course, but great to have it back on our screens as well.
Yeah, look, it certainly is, Ken. I mean, I think Irish Racing obviously had, I think they had 8 or 9 or maybe even 10 days before all the break, and then they've been back now racing since, and HRI deserve a lot of credit in terms of what they've done in terms of getting racing back on. It's on in Ireland, it's on in England, it's on all over the world now, and it's great because it gives people something to watch. Yeah. And I think racing has been put to the forefront, certainly, of a lot of people's minds. They might never have even watched a horse race before. Racing was the first sport back, but there's some great action today. We've got Ascot, we've got Newmarket, we've got Leopardstown. So a lot of good racing on the TV for all those racing fans to watch this afternoon. The big race, of course, and I'm going to try and pick the winner of it, but the big race comes from Newmarket.
Yeah.
It is the July Cup. It's for the sprinters. It's going to be a fascinating affair. I'd love it if Skeptical was to win it. For Dennis Hogan, this horse, Ken, was bought for £2,800.
Wow.
And now he's running in a race that's worth £141,000 today. He was toured at Royal Ascot. Frankie Dettori rode him at Ascot.
Yeah.
And that was the first time he's ever rode him. But he's back on him today. But I just think with this race and with the way the weather has been over in Newmarket, he wants it rattling quick. And for that reason, I'm going to go against him. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he wins it. But I think the three-year-old Golden Horde, number 10 in the 335, he won the Commonwealth at Ascot. He gets £6 allowance because he's only a three-year-old. And I just think three-year-olds have got such a tremendous record in this particular race. I'm going to stick with Golden Horde in that one.
Okay.
That's the first leg of the Lucky 15.
335 in the Newmarket. Yeah, Golden
335 in Newmarket.
Number 10.
Yeah. Number 10.
And what price is that? What price is that going
to... I'd say he's around about 5-2, Ken. He's probably going to go off favourite because of the record of three-year-olds. But I think he can run a good race.
Okay.
My next one up is going to go to Ascot. We're going to look at the 3:15. And there is a favourite, but I'm going to go against the favourite. A lot of people were saying that Mo Hathar, number 7, was quite unlucky at Royal Ascot and that he didn't get a clear run. I just don't think he made up as much ground as some people are saying. And I'm going to go for, right down the bottom, Zaki for Sir Michael Stout and Lewis Stewart. He's definitely a young jockey that a lot of people are going to become quite accustomed to. I think he's got a huge future. And I'm going to go with Zaki here. He's around about a 7 or 8 to 1 chance. Okay. And I think, having had the run already, I think that'll put him spot on for this Group 2 Summer Mile at 3:15. Okay. The next one I'm going to go for, I'm going to come back to Ireland. And Leopardstown is on today. The first race kicks off at 2 o'clock. And certainly a lady whose stable has been in tremendous form since the restart is none other than Jessica Harrington. Mm. She's absolutely burning it up on the flat this year. Yeah, and I think number 7, Noble Seal. Shane Foley, who of course is the stable jockey, he's having a tremendous time of it as well. This horse finished 4th on its racecourse debut. It's only a 2-year-old. It is a maiden. A lot of these will have had a run. Some of them haven't even ran yet, but I just like the way this horse finished out his first contest, finished 4th. So Noble Seal will be the third leg of the Lucky 15.
Okay.
And I'm actually going to go back to Newmarket for the last leg of the Lucky 15. Okay. And I think Aidan O'Brien can strike in the superlative stakes. I was very impressed with the way this horse made all on his debut at the Curragh. Number 3 in the 3 o'clock, Hudson River. Oh. Ryan Moore rides this son of Galileo. I was just really taken by him, Ken. He'd done all the donkey work on his first run. Hopefully, Aidan's normally come on an absolute ton for having had their first run of the season. And hopefully, Hudson River can deliver the superlative stakes for the master of Ballydoyle.
Okay, and what price is Hudson River?
Hudson River, Ken, I think is around about a 7-2 chance as well. 3-1, 7-2.
Okay. So that's a good Lucky 15. A 7-2, a 3-1, a 7-1, and a 5-2.
Yes, yeah. So hopefully a couple of them should hit the board.
Yeah.
Leon, hi, it's Peter here. I was just going to ask you something that you both touched on, but looking at the racing last night, Quebec and the Curragh, Freewheeling Dan in the Midlands Grand National, it was the most extraordinary race, and a circuit and a course that not many people would see in Quebec. But RTÉ have really kind of struck gold with these 2 hours of footage every weekend. It seems to be, will hopefully do a great service for promoting the sport as well.
Yeah, 100%. It's been great to see, Peter, in terms of them taking up these hour programmes, I think, on a Friday, on a Saturday and on a Sunday, when obviously they don't have the kind of main racing, when they had the Guineas or even when they had the Derby. Through the sponsorship, I think HRI have sponsored all these one-hour programmes. And it's just bringing horse racing into a lot of homes that might never have even watched a horse race before. And that finish that you talk about, that was one of the best finishes that you will ever see. No inch was given. No quarter was given. Davy Russell tried to get up the inside. The fella on his inside, he wasn't taking any passengers. Davy was trying to win the race. But that's what you want. Yeah. These lads are riding to try and win. It's a big race. It was a huge win for the trainer, Dermot McLaughlin, because he doesn't have a huge string of horses. But the horses that he does have, he gets tremendous results from them. A fascinating finish to that race. I mean, you could have picked out maybe 3 or 4 turning in. There's not much of a home straight in Quebec, and that's why every single inch you had to hold on to what you had. But a fascinating finish, and it's great to see racing on, even if it's only an hour. We get to see a couple of races, we get to see a couple of highlights, and it's brilliant for any horse racing fan. We're being spoiled at the moment.
Absolutely.
It's the interesting thing as well, looking at it from your own industry, Leon, I'd be interested to see what kind of an impact the fact that there's no totes there. Is that good or bad for the game? Is it good or bad for even yourselves and Boyle Sports? And what kind of impact do you think? Because obviously it's synonymous, isn't it, with people going to the racetrack and having that day out as well, responsible?
Yeah, look, you know, I mean, like, unfortunately, in these times when it is racing behind closed doors, you don't have the totes. The lads who would travel length and breadth of the country, the actual bookmakers in the betting ring, like, them lads are being not deny the living, but they can't perform the living at the moment because, you know, due to the restrictions. So it is tough on a lot of people. You've got all the catering staff, you've got all the hospitality staff. A lot of people don't actually realise how many people are employed at a racetrack on any given day. So look, it's tough at the moment, but we've got to be led, firstly, by health. And once things are hopefully staying going in the right direction, people can get back on the racetrack soon. But certainly, look, our shops and every other bookmaking shops have been open since the 29th of June. We're adhering to all the social distancing rules. And I think people are just trying to get back to the normality of maybe going into a betting shop and maybe having their little lucky 15, especially on the weekends with such high-class racing on. So, look, it's changing times for everybody. We're all just being led in terms of medical guidelines. And hopefully, if we keep going the way we're going, it'll be great to see people back on a racetrack sooner rather than later. And all sports. I think when you look at Gaelic, when you look at football, when you look at anything, fans make the sport. There's no doubt about that. So hopefully in the coming weeks and the coming months, people will be able to hopefully get back to go and see whatever sport is their fancy.
Yeah, and I was up, Leon, up in Leopardstown last week with David Atwood. He was showing me around the work that they're doing up there at the moment. They've totally redeveloped the place. It looks amazing. Whole new entrance places. The old Club 92 that myself and Ken used to know. Well, that's gone, unfortunately. That's the only bad thing. That's gone. And they've turned it into an amazing new function room, bar, food hall area for punters. So they're looking forward to welcoming them back. They're hoping for September is when they're aiming. And they really hope that will be the time. So it'll be great to see live bodies back at racing.
Yeah, you know, like hopefully, because that's a huge month for them. It's Irish Champions Weekend. Yeah. And it's something that we should be hugely proud of in terms of Irish racing is at the number one spot in terms of the quality, in terms of the breeding, in terms of what we do. Like, we should be hugely proud of what we have on this great little island because the breeding that we have, the jockeys that we have, the trainers that we have, the facilities that we have, we are punching way above our weight. But we've been doing that for a long, long time. And it's something that all of us should get right behind.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, we want you to stay safe, Leon. And thanks very much for your lucky 15 today, because I'm looking forward to our next stake that you owe us.
Don't be thanking me yet, Ken. Did we get a couple of winners, hopefully?
Well, it's Golden Horde, Saki, Noble Seal and Hudson River. That's your lucky 15. We'll be calling them out during the show as well, Leon. But thanks very much for taking the time to give us your lucky 15 this morning.
No problem, lads. Anytime.
Okay. Leon Blanche there from Boyle Sports. Golden Horde, Saki, Noble Seal and Hudson River. That's your lucky 15. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie, the van insurance specialists.
On Dublin's Sunshine 106.8.
Ken Doherty.
And now it's going to be the World Championship, for Stephen Roach is the champion of the world.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Very good morning. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 FM. Thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Leon Blanche was just on to us there, giving us his lucky 15 today. Golden Horde, the 335 at Newmarket. Saki is the 315 at Ascot. Noble Seal, the 2 o'clock at Leopardstown, and Hudson River is the 3 o'clock at Newmarket as well. A very sad day, of course. The great Jack Charlton, a hero to us all here in Ireland, has sadly passed away this morning, aged 85. We have an exclusive with Eamon Dunphy just coming up after the 10 o'clock news. It'll be very interesting to hear what Eamon has to say. He has some fond memories and his ups and downs with Jack Charlton, but huge respect for the man, there's no doubt about that. So an interesting chat with Eamon Dunphy coming up just after the 10 o'clock news. Also an interesting chat that we have coming up. Peter Breen got an exclusive with Cian O'Connor. The Dublin Horse Show, of course, was due to take place next week. But Peter Breen caught up with Cian O'Connor in his magnificent equestrian centre. And it's an exclusive interview, so you're going to listen to that now for the next 8.5 minutes. Fantastic interview.
Hi, Keane. Keane, it's been a funny last couple of months. I suppose on normal circumstances, you would be preparing for the Dublin Horse Show next week, but obviously that isn't happening in light of what's been going on with COVID. Can you just give us your own thoughts on that and how special a show it is for you?
Yeah, thanks, Peter. It's always a special show for all the Irish riders and indeed for many of the international riders who travel to the RDS every year for the Dublin Horse Show. The highlight for us being the Aga Khan, normally on the Friday afternoon, so it feels a bit strange this week. We'd normally be getting ready for that competition and indeed the Grand Prix on Sunday, the Puissance, with great speed classes. Really just a fantastic show all around and something that we all work towards really the whole year to try and achieve. So like all sports, things have been postponed and obviously it's a very difficult, a very serious time, and thankfully things are starting to open up and move again, and with a bit of luck we can work towards the Olympics for next year.
What are your highlights for the Dublin Horse Show? It's a, I suppose it's a competition that's synonymous, I suppose, from your own end and your own experience as a Nations Cup, but playing in front of your home crowd must be special.
Yeah, we travel week in, week out all around the world to different venues, but there's something special about jumping at home. I can recall growing up when I was younger and watching the likes of Eddie Mackin and Jerry Mullins and all the top riders and wondering someday was that possible, and so supposed to realise that and to be lucky enough to jump on some Irish teams and go well in that main arena is something really, really special.
How has the postponement of the Olympics affected you and your planning, presumably with PSG final?
Yeah, PSG final is my main horse. He was part of the team that won in Barcelona last year that got that Olympic qualification team ticket. So he's still a little bit inexperienced. So in a way, having a bit of extra time will be no harm. I've also just been developing my own facility in County Meath, which we've just completed. So we have all the arenas and facilities here to emulate competition. So that's been no harm in that I can keep training and keep the horses working towards the big competitions when they resume.
You touched on Carlswood there. It's been a vision for you for many years. Can you just tell us about where it came from, where the idea came from, and what the facility actually provides?
Yeah, well, myself and my wife Ruth bought a nice property in County Meath just outside Batterstown, between Batterstown and Dunboyne, about 7 years ago. And I've always wanted to build, I suppose, a centre of excellence for all things equine. It's been in my mind for some time. Still, Ireland is synonymous with the Irish horse, and still people like to come here to look at horses. But also in terms of education and coaching, I've been involved a number of riders the last couple of years in developing them to the top of the sport. So it was something that I wanted to build as a facility where people could come and train. We assist them with their horses in terms of the training, the management, the programs, and working towards their high performance targets. So it's a new idea. It's just come to fruition, and yeah, we're looking forward to it and excited about it and developing it as the years go by.
You touched on the fact that it's replicated a number of other arenas, Aachen, the RDS as well. So that'll help riders who are coming here trying to prepare for those challenging arenas as well.
Yeah, I suppose, let's be honest, Ireland's still a little bit off the beaten track from mainland Europe. A lot of the big competitions would be based there, and there's a kind of a hub in Limburg in Belgium. There's a triangle of areas there between Belgium and Eindhoven in Holland, where a lot of the equestrian establishments are. A lot of the top riders or people have come to base for international competitions. But some of those venues are nice. But I thought if we built something special here in Dublin, it would attract people. There's also people travelling from abroad to go to university here that maybe they could come and do a stint with us. And so in order for them to come here, I wanted to have facilities that were as good as anywhere else. So we built a huge sand arena with an ebb and flow water system. We built a grass arena equivalent to the size of any big competition venue around the world. So I just thought when we have the facilities, the people will come, and that's what we're aiming for anyway.
How has COVID affected your business? Bar the planning for the Olympics and obviously the horse show, which we've mentioned, but in one way, maybe it was a positive to be here when you're usually travelling so much so you can actually oversee the development, but how generally has it affected from your staff and the acquisition of horses?
We rely heavily on buying and selling. That's our main business. Obviously, me competing on the Irish team is the flagship, and I coach the riders that I work with. But obviously, buying and selling is the main source of revenue. And when there's no travel, there's no trade. People can't come to check the horse out or come to try it. So it's been very difficult. And like all businesses, there's nobody who's been unaffected, but we're just hoping if we can stay above water and break even for 2020 that we can resume, hit the ground running when things kick off in 2021, please God. and that business picks up and we're able to go from there.
Have you any idea of a time frame in mind about what the coming months will pose for you, or is it just a case of wait and see and competing at home?
Thankfully, the competitions have started at home, so I'm able to bring out some of my younger horses. We have a horse show this weekend in Cross McGlen, and indeed the next couple of weeks there's some in Wexford, some different competitions as well. So we'll do those competitions over the next coming weeks, and then when it's healthy and safe to do so, we'll probably plan a trip abroad, maybe September, October time, and then just watch, I suppose, the virus with interest and see where the areas to travel are. Normally we go to Florida for the winter. There's a big competition circuit there. If that's not the best advice, we might go to Spain. There's other tours there. So we try to go to venues where we can bring our clients with us, train and compete, and also the younger horses where we can develop them and maybe also buy and sell.
There's a few dimensions to your business, Keane, but when you look at it, how have you overcome the challenges of the last couple of months? Obviously, horses don't know that there's a virus and a pandemic going on out there, so it's been very much a case of staying motivated, but also keep on working hard for the horses that you have.
Yeah, exactly. The horses don't know. And also, you're working with horses who are valuable, so you can't just let them down. In other words, you can't just say, okay, I'll take the shoes off them and put them in the field and they'll be okay. You actually have to keep the staff on. You have to keep them in work. And that's why I say you have to just look at this year as a year that it is, and hopefully we can just weather the storm and ride through it. I'm excited about our new facility. I think it's a really good addition for the industry here, and for people who come to Ireland who are into any kind of equestrian, we'll be able to give them a look around, show them what we believe is a very worthwhile initiative and something that is open for use.
Just finally on the Olympics itself, winning bronze in London with Blue Lloyd was something, I suppose, that I know you've mentioned before as being one of the most important moments of your career and one of the most important horses, even though you weren't together for that long a period. Can you just explain what that meant to you to get on that podium in London, and how, I suppose, that will drive you forward for the next year and a half?
Yeah, I suppose going to the Olympics is anyone's dream in any sport. We can compete at the various championships within our sport, Europeans and Worlds and so on, which are really fantastic. The Olympics just has something different about it. You really want to get there. You want to do your best. And that little horse that I had, Blue Lloyd, just was fantastic to be able to stand on that podium. Obviously, to win the bronze was unbelievable. I was so thrilled to do it. It's the only equestrian medal ever in the history of the Olympic Games. And then afterwards, I subsequently sold the horse and I got him back to ride the year after he won the Grand Prix in Dublin. And he opened so many doors for me. I began to coach the new rider, Nicole Walker, from Canada. And then that also opened other doors for me in North America. So I suppose it's amazing. I have a lot to be thankful to that special horse for in all he did for me in my career.
And then just finally, as you mentioned, there's a couple of shows. So there'll be an opportunity for people who are interested in show jumping, obviously. I think the beauty of the Dublin Horse Show is it gets a lot of non-traditional show jumping fans interested in this sport and getting them engaged. So there'll be a chance, I suppose, for people to follow Irish riders nationally over the next little while.
Yeah, there's a series on. We'll put up the schedule on our website in the coming week of what shows we might be doing and what horses. And if people have any interest in coming down, we'd love to chat to them and they can have a look at our horses.
Great. Keane, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful interview with Keane O'Connor, of course, bronze medalist in the Olympics, and doing a wonderful job with all those horses up in his incredible equestrian centre there. We have an exclusive with Eamon Dunphy just after the 10 o'clock news. He's had his ups and downs with the great Jack Charlton, but very sad, of course, to hear of Jack Charlton's passing this morning, age 85, World Cup winner, of course, with England in 66, but more importantly for the Irish fans, a hero as he led the Irish team in 88, in Italia 90, and of course in the USA in 1994. Great memories of the great man Jack Charlton, Big Jack as he was fondly known, and he'd be sadly missed. Our condolences from everybody here at Dublin Stock and Sport to all his family and friends as well. Lots coming up. If you have any memories of him, please send us a text 087 11 55 777.
Yeah, obviously it's still quite raw, isn't it, Ken? And it'll be great to hear Eamon's thoughts. They're synonymous with each other, right or wrong. Produce great drama and great entertainment, I think, for people over the years. But obviously at this time of year, with the challenges we're facing, it's going to be very difficult to mourn Jack Charlton appropriately. So it'll be lovely
if between the FAI and between the relevant people with Jack Charlton's family, most importantly, that there will be an opportunity, because with COVID people haven't been able to travel to funerals. You know, there's been a lot of online footage, and it will, and I think it's very important, because Irish people will need that chance to say thank you and that chance to mourn and to grieve. So hopefully there will be a chance, and hopefully in time then the FAI get a chance to actually mark his passing as well.
Yeah, that's very important, I suppose, Reg, isn't it? Something in the near future, you know, in the Aviva or something like that.
Yeah, certainly, because of the fact that, as Peter says, you can't be honoured in the way that he'd want, and I'd say that every Irish person would love that opportunity to gather together once more and remember Jack.
Yeah, as we said, very sad news of Jack Charlton passed this morning, age 85. Of course, he played for Leeds as well, very successful with Leeds in the 70s, brother of the great Bobby Charlton as well, but more importantly to Irish, a hero to us all because of the great things that the Irish team achieved during those times as well, when the whole country needed a lift in 88, in 90 and even in 94. The great man, Big Jack, has passed away very, very sadly this morning. We'll be back after the news at 10 o'clock. Don't go away. Eamon Dunphy on the way.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
Sexton waits, here it comes, it looks good, he likes it, Nigel Owen's arm goes hurt, and Ireland have stolen the game.
And Sonny O'Sullivan is going to take the world title back to Ireland.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Very sad to hear the passing of the legend Jack Charlton. Died this morning, age 85. A hero to many, and of course particularly here in Ireland, leading Ireland in 88, in 90, and of course in 94 in America. Very sad to hear of his passing. We're going to play a little promo here.
So for the very first time in the history of Irish international soccer, the Republic of Ireland team is involved in a penalty shootout.
And he put the ball down and he stepped back, and you know there was only one place this was going, and that's exactly what happened. And it was all about keeping your eye on the ball, get the timing right, and then the great thing about penalties is that you don't have to catch it. You don't have to knock it away to safety. You just keep it out of the net. I'd saved it, and then I look up the pitch and I see Dave walking down. I says, Dave O'Leary.
And who is stepping forward to assume the task? David O'Leary.
Dave O'Leary never had a penalty in his life.
The nation holds its
breath. Yeah, the nation held its breath, and of course that was the great Jack Charlton team of Italia 90. Sadly passed away this morning, and a man that had his ups and downs with the great Jack Charlton, but no doubt had a lot of great respect for him, is of course our very own esteemed journalist, Eamon Dunphy, and of course, the leader of the Stan podcast as well, a very famous podcast that's gone as well. Eamon, very welcome to the show. It's great to have you. It's a very, very sad morning. Sad for Irish fans, sad for Irish sports fans, and sad for fans all around the world. Passing of the big man, Jack.
Absolutely, and of course, a World Cup winner with England in 1966. It's a very sad morning, and you know, he gave us a lot in this country. And he gave us memories. He took us to places that we'd longed to go. We'd never qualified for a major championship. He took us to the European Championships in 1988, where we beat England, which was sort of an amazing accomplishment. He took us to the World Cup and to the quarter final of the World Cup, where we only lost to the hosts in 1990, and we had that great day in Giant Stadium in 94 when we beat Italy. So he, I think he left an indelible mark on the country, not just for soccer, but people who had no interest in soccer or even sport. Began to enjoy the adventures of the team when Jack was in charge. So it is a very sad day indeed. He was a good man.
Yeah. He was a good man. But I know you had your ups and downs over the years, and that was part of the entertainment as well. But you know what I mean?
He famously
said the biggest mistake of his life was not answering that man's questions. He said, "I made Eamon Dunphy famous."
He did, yeah. He actually genuinely thought that. He thought I was on the make. But I was getting famous by attacking him. What I was talking about was football tactics. Yeah. And really, when there's a lot more to sport and to that story than football tactics. This was about, beating England in a European Championship, beating Italy in 94, getting to the quarterfinal of the World Cup, all of that stuff. You didn't have to be a football fan. Everyone bought in to it. Everyone was having fun. They were having barbecues. And there was that incredible Sunday when we played Egypt. And even the guard cancelled their matches and put on big screens in the clubs, which was a kind of watershed, And all around the country, people followed the adventures, if you like, of the Irish team. And he wasn't... Jack was cranky more than anything, but he wasn't a bad man at all. He was a good man and a decent man. And he had a singular view of what needed to be done. And actually on the podcast, I understand, we paid tribute to him about a month ago on his 85th birthday with John and Liam. And it's a really good listen. It's very affectionate. John was with him at Leeds for 10 or 11 years.
Yeah.
So they were very close.
Mm.
And Liam played for him. Liam told a great story. Liam, when he first came into the Irish camp, Liam was a big star, obviously. And when the first training session, he shouted out to Liam, "Come here, Ian." Ian Brady was the more smarter.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Liam Brady and Marta Hindley.
Yeah. So that was, he had a thing with names. He wasn't really... But the other thing that it's worth saying about him, Ken, it's very important, how well he treated Paul McGrath.
Yeah.
Because Paul always had his struggles with drink,
He minded himself and Mick Bourne.
Yes, they did. Yeah, and it was very nice, human touch.
Mm.
He protected Paul. And Paul, of course, repaid him, never more so than when we beat Italy in Giant Stadium. But he was a decent guy.
Yeah.
And we owe him an awful lot. He was 10 years manager, and he raised the bar an awful lot in terms of where we want to go and where we got to. The results were right. The tactics, that's another story.
Morning, Eamon.
Hi, Reggie.
Interesting what you say there about a decent guy and the human touch. Because, Eamon, I remember when he first came in, going back that length of time, we were in the middle of a pretty tough predicament in Ireland.
Yeah.
The troubles were going on. An Englishman coming in here to run the Irish team didn't go down well. I remember that go home Jack flag and all that kind of stuff that was in the stand and the stadium at the time. But I think it was, that decency and that humanity.
Yeah.
He seemed to win the Irish people over very, very quickly and put all that stuff to the side.
Yeah, there was very little of it, Reggie. Mm. But it was a tough time. The country was also in a recession, a bad one. He came in 1986, and that was at the worst of it. And we qualified for the European Championship in 1988. Mm. And many people say that was the beginning of the Celtic Tiger. I'm not quite sure where the link is there. But Jack was, he'd been an outstanding player. He was in the England World Cup side, played for Leeds, played for England a lot, was Footballer of the Year. That side of his character. But I think he embraced Ireland. He loved fishing, in particular. He loved the countryside. I think the Irish people took to him in a big way because there was no affectation. There was no big-time Charlie. He was a pretty straightforward guy. He called it as he saw it, and I think he built up a strong bond with the Irish people, a very, very strong bond, even with people who didn't follow soccer. You know, he sort of, there was something appealing about his rugged and determined, you know, FU kind of attitude.
Yeah.
He didn't care what anyone thought, particularly me.
Yeah, well, I mean, even on that, you know, you mentioned tactics were your bugbear with them, maybe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, his tactic was, you know, the long ball tactic that Jack was famous for. But he seemed to almost understand the ability of the players and maybe the limitations of the players and just play to a game plan that worked best for them and seemed, anyway, with the results that he got, to get the best out of the players based on that.
Yeah, well, there's another side to that particular coin. We had great players, Reggie.
Yeah.
I mean, great players.
There were.
You know, he really didn't need to play Paul in midfield or Ronnie Whelan at left back.
Yeah.
Or leave David Leary out altogether for 3 years.
Mm.
I mean, the first 3 years, David didn't get into the squad.
Yeah.
And David, at that time, was the best centre-half in Europe, playing for Arsenal. So, but he did it his way, and even the players who played for him, they laugh about it, you know, how bizarre the tactics were.
Mm.
But they worked.
Mm.
If you look at the modern game, there was one thing Jack got right, and it was about the pressing game. Everyone knows what it is now. Mm. City do it, Liverpool do it, Barcelona did it. You press your opponents in their own half of the field, and you don't let them build up. You don't give them a moment's peace. And you torment them. And that was what Jack introduced. When we didn't have the ball, that's the way you go. You make them feel uncomfortable. The other half of the equation, when you have got the ball, however, was nothing like Manchester City or Liverpool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You banged it up in behind their defence, and then you pressed them.
Hmm.
So he was half right, and it was a very good analysis of what European teams in particular hate. I remember Spain playing at Lansdowne Road one day on a bumpy pitch. Mm. We beat them 1-0 and they came off the field bewildered. They'd hated it. But they'd been sort of under pressure for 90 minutes. So, you know, he took a calculated gamble and largely it paid off. We had very, very good players, Reggie.
Yeah,
we'll never have those players again.
Yeah. Class team, yeah.
Yeah.
Eamon, hi, it's Peter here. And
hi, Peter.
It's very interesting you chatting to about the relationship he would have had with Paul McGrath. When you think back, I just want to ask you about his actual playing days. So when you look at the people he would have had to the side of him, Norman Hunter, Bobby Moore, for that great Leeds team, that great England team, and yet he was the constant there, and obviously his own brother. Could you just tell us about the footballer, how impactful, how good, how strong he was, and in tough teams to get into as well?
Oh, yeah, he was a very good centre-half, and John Giles tells the story about him when Don Revy first went to Leeds. He was going to let Jack go because he wasn't a good trainer. He was quite undisciplined and Revy changed him and he became outstanding in an outstanding Leeds team. He was a very good centre-half. He could go up also. They invented this thing where he'd go up and stand in front of the opposition goalkeeper and get a few goals. Jack was a very considerable part of England's World Cup winning team.
Mm.
And as you say, he played with great players. Bobby Moore, of course, being one of the greatest. Jack was a top player.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that. And he had his own views about football, which were, you know, different from many other people, like John Giles, say, for example, Liam, or indeed me.
What about your relationship with him, Eamon, as things went on? Because, you know, there were rocky times for you and
you know,
between you and him. And you suffered the brunt of it. I remember, you know, Irish supporters tried to turn over your car
while you were still
sitting in it at one stage.
Yeah, sure did. When I came back from after the quarterfinal defeat in Italy, the next day I came back and it was 500,000 people waiting, and I got caught, and I was lucky.
They didn't
turn the car over.
Yeah.
It was kind of hysteric.
Yeah.
You know, and then everything was out of proportion. Mm. I was critical of the tactics, felt we could have done it differently.
Mm.
And there was a misunderstanding at the heart of that. When we played Egypt on the Sunday, And drew 0-0. We played really badly.
Yeah.
We just lumped the ball forward. It was terrible.
Yeah.
And I didn't say after the match what he thought I said. It was reported out in Italy that I said I was ashamed to be Irish.
Okay.
In fact, what I said was whoever sent the team out to play like that should be ashamed of themselves, which is an entirely different
thing. Yeah.
But
was that the famous pen throwing incident?
Yeah, if you look at it again, you can see it on YouTube. Ken. I just dropped the pen.
But the point is,
on a misunderstanding, Jack, the players, and all the fans who were in Italy, and of course a lot of people at home, it got it mixed up.
Yeah.
But that's an irrelevance. I mean, I was talking football tactics.
Yeah.
The pleasure and the pride that people took from Jack's team and their achievements was infinitely more important.
I remember when he refused to talk to you or have your press conference and that, and then you dressed up and went up to a gig that he was doing.
I did, you were with me.
Up in the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah, we were together.
Yeah, and Eamon, you dressed up, didn't you? So
I did, yeah.
I recognise you.
I had to go in disguise. Yeah, absolutely. I had to go in disguise, and I got you to come with me. And it was Mick, was it?
Yeah.
The three of us signed up. I didn't. It took my life into my hands, and we got away with it. Sat there for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Watching his, he did it. He was a great after dinner speaker.
Yeah.
And a great sort of stand up comedian.
Yeah.
And he'd done that before he ever came to Ireland. He'd always had that gift. Of holding a room and telling very, very funny stories, which doesn't really fit with the caricature of Jack, but he could be extremely funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was good entertainment.
Above all, Eamon, your ups and downs with him over the year, but there's no doubt that you had a respect for him.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He was a good man. He was a great football man. He contributed immensely to the game of soccer. And in this country, he was like an evangelist for soccer, which has always been, before his time, a Cinderella sport. Now you have people like Shane Long, who's from Tipperary, Kevin Doyle, who's from Wexford, John Egan, playing for Sheffield now, whose father played, and from Kerry. So people in parts of Ireland that never really considered soccer very much at all fell in love with it and started to play it. And now soccer is the most played, participated sport in Ireland. So Jack, this is part of Jack's legacy.
Yeah.
As well as all the wonderful moments that people enjoyed, the penalty shootout, Giant Stadium, beating England in Stuttgart in 88. These are moments in people's lives that they'll never forget. And that's much more important than, you know, who should be playing in midfield. So I'm very, very sad, and I kind of think everyone in Ireland will think today and remember how much he gave us, really, and he gave us a lot.
Yeah. How do you think, like, how will we be able to celebrate, you know, his life and what he did for our sport in general?
Well, I think he got the freedom of Dublin. He was assured always of a warm and affectionate welcome from Irish people. I was pally with him for the first 2 years he was here, and we went to Ballina. He loved fishing, and he fished in the Corrib. I think that's the river. You're better at geography than me, Ken. But we spent a night in Ballina, and they held a reception for Jack. I think he was given an after-dinner speech, actually, what he used to call his earners. And I was doing a profile of him, and we had a lovely evening together. He was fine. He had simple tastes. He liked a pint, and he was a grand man who gave us an awful lot. And I think he's deep in the folklore of Ireland, and in our collective memory, Jack is a big figure who will be remembered with great affection.
Yeah, he will be. Eamon, it's a sad day, but it's a great for you to take the time to talk to us exclusively on our sports show here. I know it's at short notice, but we appreciate it. Appreciate your thoughts and your kind words as well, and your huge respect for him.
Okay, thanks very much, Ken. Okay. And cheers, Reggie.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay.
All the best.
Eamon Dunphy there, of course, presenter of the podcast The Last Stand as well. And there's a nice, as he's talked about, John Giles and Liam Brady, if you want to listen to it, about the great Jack Charlton as well, and about his birthday.
Yeah, there was a good thing there on Twitter just looking while Eamon was talking, and they were just saying, you know, around that time when the Irish team went to see the Pope, and Paul McGrath was talking about it, and he was saying how Jack was struggling to stay awake during the sermon. The sermon, the Pope was going on a bit, you know. So they were all sitting there, the whole team and everything else, and Jack was nodding off and trying to stay awake. He was terrified the photographers were going to catch him falling asleep. But he did nod off eventually, according to Paul McGrath. But when he woke up, it was just at the end when the Pope was giving his blessing, and he kind of had his hand raised, giving a blessing to the team. And Jack woke up and thought he was waving at him, stood up and waved back at the Pope. so it's just a nice story to hear about him. I'd say there's so many of those.
Yeah, so many. And it's good to hear of Eamon's thoughts, because he did have some, you know, terrible times, the ups and downs with him.
I mean, that's journalism. Eamon lives, you know, that's the type of journalist that he is. He you know, he courts controversy because he has opinions.
Yeah.
It's something that's going out of the world these days. People are not allowed to have opinions anymore, but Eamon is never afraid of having an opinion, and you need that. You need people who are going to challenge. And as a result of that, you know, his relationship could be considered rocky with Jack. But at the end of the day, like, that happens all the time.
Of course it does.
And it doesn't change the fact that people have mutual respect for each other. And, you know, on a day like today, everybody remembers the good times as well as the bad. So, you know, I mean, that's journalism, and Eamon is well aware of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. As you heard, Eamon Dunphy there, exclusive, talking about the great Jack Charlton, who sadly passed away today, aged 85. We'll be back after this.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
This is the ball of Tiger Woods.
Vern, this is extremely difficult. This is one of the toughest pitches on the entire place here.
Well, here it comes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. In your life, have you seen anything like that?
Sunshine. 106.8.
A very warm welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Lots of texts coming in commemorating the great life of Jack Charlton, of course, who sadly passed away aged 85 this morning. He was a hero to many. A lot of people have got some great stories about him. And also lots of people texting in about our competition, of course, for a four ball to Paris Court Golf Club as well. In which month is the Masters going to be played? It was supposed to be in April, of course. In which month is the Masters going to be played? It's going to be played before the end of the year. Just text us to 087 11 55 777. We're going to talk a little bit about rugby now and catch up with the boys, with Reggie and Peter, and let us know. Reg, I mean, due back August 22nd, Pro 14. How about the international front as well? What's happening?
Yeah, well, there's a busy schedule has been laid out. Two busy summers in over in the UK. They're starting to already kind of lash back a little bit, because in the Gallagher, they're looking at playing two games a week now over a sort of a 7 week period, followed by a return to international fixtures, followed by a full season starting again, followed by a Lions tour at the end of it all. So there's sort of a chat that there might be 12 months of non-stop rugby for players, which is simply not sustainable given the way the game has gone now. So it's coming back, but there are question marks around certain areas of it. Here at home, the lads are back training. They've been very happy to get back into training and sort of get back to some form of normality. And then there are inter-pros scheduled for the 22nd of August, that weekend, in the Aviva, to try and get sort of a little bit of atmosphere and everything else going. Not sure yet about when crowds and spectators are going to be allowed back. Certainly the Aviva could technically hold 18,000 people and keep them spatially apart and social distance them if they wanted to, but at the moment there's no plans from government to allow that type of thing to happen. So yeah, it's interesting times.
Yeah, it is interesting times. There was talk this week about the Pro 14 expanding to Pro 16, and that's obviously to bring in all the proper South African teams, to put it crudely. And so there's a lot of talk about that and the possible impact for the Six Nations. Interestingly, on the player movement, when COVID-19 and the extension of contracts and the extension of leagues started to really make headlines, that, you know, obviously transfers were in place. We mentioned Ian Madigan moving to Ulster, but Munster now are going to be really well placed when rugby does resume. They've got Damien Dalande and RG Snyman, who are two South African World Cup winners, come into the squad. They've got Matt Gallagher from Saracens, who's a very talented player. So all of a sudden now, Munster, if they can get their ducks in a row, are going to be very, very strong. Leinster, on the other hand, are down a few bodies. A few players like Joe Tamani have moved on, but they've down two of the promising tight heads who've moved to Connacht and Ulster, or to Connacht and Munster respectively. So that's Jack Ainger and Roman Sanaloa. So the worry is, from a Leinster point of view, whether they will have that depth. And this again is going back to an argument and a conversation we would have had over a long period, that as long as Leinster keep on producing players, it's great. The population's here, the structures are so outstanding with the academy and the clubs and schools. But actually, at what point are you going to have to stop, and are Leinster going to have to go, hang on a second here, we can't be expected to keep on having to produce players for other provinces. So while it is important that we do get players playing, that carrot and stick is still going to be evident. And obviously what's happening otherwise, the IRFU and Rugby Players Ireland are still in negotiations with each other about that pay dispute. Hopefully that'll be resolved. The players have already made a cut, which would be seen as generous, but there is an awareness about that. And as Reggie mentioned, a club like Leicester all of a sudden have lost Manu Tulagi. Noel Reid, who's an Irish player, has left as well, and under a bit of a cloud. So there is a concern, and there has to be an awareness now for rugby about where it's going to position itself in post-COVID society.
There's also danger, and, you know, it is a reality. There is a danger that clubs and organisations can take advantage of this, you know, and this is where the players' representative body comes in and is so important, because, you know, the cuts are being made, and it's a kind of a take it or leave it in some situations. That's what happened over in Leicester with those players. Now, like, I can see legal battles coming down the road, because those players had contracts.
Yeah.
COVID isn't covered under contract as such, you know, act of God or whatever way you want to put it. But the reality is, if you went to court, it might be very hard to argue against a contract that players have had. So there's a lot of that going on, and while the players have been generous to a point, I think if clubs and organisations tried to push that too far, I think there might be a kickback and there might be a backlash. There have also been redundancies, don't forget. I mean, there's been a lot of people laid off in rugby right across the board in the professional game. So while some players are taking a cut, some people have completely lost their jobs. So there's that to bear in mind too. So it's not the game that it was, you know, literally 7 months ago. It's completely changed.
And of course the IRFU have lost a lot of money because of, you know, the cancellations, the gates, of the games, everything. Yeah.
Six Nations was the big blow for them.
Yeah.
And hopefully that'll resume, but obviously it won't be with full houses and all the trimmings that benefits from that. But
there is a danger, Peter, with that. You just mentioned Six Nations and money. And look, I mean, we don't have time to go into it in full detail, but the chance that all these competitions are going to be bought up by the big hedge fund manager company that's getting involved in everything. I mean, they were able to, CVC, they were able to buy Formula One and change that completely to a pay-per-view format. And I heard Neil Francis talking about how there's a real danger that they'll come in, they'll buy the Six Nations, they'll buy Pro 16, the European Cup could well be gone, they'll buy the Southern Hemisphere stuff, and all of a sudden your rugby will only be streamed and on Amazon and these types of things. And what would that do to the game if that happens?
I don't think that's Armageddon. I don't think, like, what you can argue with CVC is they did hugely advance Formula One as a sport, as a product as well. So while there is obviously a concern, I think the general problem that rugby has is, because it's a relatively new sport in professional terms, it's 25 years old now, so maybe it's not that new, but it doesn't know what to do. It doesn't seem to know what it wants to do with money. IRFU has done it well. They've invested in academies. They've been very clever in not going out and buying out a whole stream of foreign players, and that's why the success of Leinster, of Munster, of Ulster, and of the national team in recent years, Connacht as well, obviously winning the league. So that's been, they've been right in terms of how they valued the game. We can't forget the underage structures. Now there's going to be more money coming back into the system once hopefully society resumes to a level of normality over the next year, which is what we hope.
But that wouldn't be the case, Peter, in other countries. So if you look at Australia, they're devastated at the moment. In rugby, their union is in turmoil. Well, it's been able to be propped up in the past. It's not being propped up anymore. And World Rugby, their funds are starting to diminish a little bit too, you know, because competitions are getting challenged or cancelled on them too. So I think they gave 9 million to the Australian Union, but it's not just Australia. I mean, the model in England is not sustainable with the Gallagher of private sugar daddies owning clubs and buying, pumping money into that. That's already changed, you know. I mean, Saracen's got caught out on it, but it has changed as well in the model in that these business owners now have other concerns because of COVID. Their core businesses are suffering. So as a result of that, they're not able to input into the league in the same way. So there's a long, long way to go.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to be tempted by the money and take it and run. That's the danger.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's a discussion that will go on as well. And what you... August 22nd, that's the first time they'll be back in anyway, but lots of more to discuss over the coming weeks as well before that. Okay, Declan Drake joins us on the line. Welcome back, Declan. How are you?
Very well, Ken. You good, Self and Reg?
Very good. Tell us a little bit, obviously, the very sad passing of Jack Charlton, of course, and you have a little story to tell us about.
Yeah, so where do you start? I suppose really there's so many memories over a long period of time, and I'm old enough to remember the pre-Charlton days, you know, and a lot of people seem to think in Ireland football began in 1988 when we qualified for the Euros. I suppose in many respects it did, because he took us to a new level. He instilled a tremendous belief in the Irish people and the Irish players that he had at the time. But I go to the other end of it, I suppose, Ken, the night that we lost to the Dutch in the playoff for Euro 96 at Anfield, and it was his last game in charge, and he went on the procession around the hallowed turf of Anfield after the game.
I was there, Declan.
Yeah,
I was there myself.
In the cup end, and the reception that he got that night was just a measure to the man. One club man, remember as well, Kent, for Leeds United.
Right, Leeds, 773 league games he played.
Yeah. In this day and age, it's a tremendous thing to be able to say. And what a servant to football, what a man. And may he rest in peace. His sympathies to Pat and his family as well.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, we've been inundated with text, you know, and all goodwill about the great man and our experiences with him. People that have met him, you know, at Dublin Airport or fishing or in pubs or, you know, at games and stuff. And everybody had a great word to say about him. Declan, I know there's lots of GAA news that we're going to be talking about. We can't get through it today, but you've got lots of news of it. So we're going to take you back, of course, next week and give us all the lay down.
Yeah, so basically, first of all, we're glad to be back with the club championship hurling next week, Ken, and football the following week. But I just want to make this appeal to the people of Dublin. For God's sake, get back and start doing the simple things again.
Mm.
We've seen a spike in the R number. We've seen a spike in the number of new cases. If this continues, all these games against Westmeath for the Dublin footballers in the championship, Leash or the hurlers in the championship, all the great club action just simply won't happen. So please, please get back to basics. Continue to do what you have been doing in large numbers, and we can look forward to these occasions, because trust me, Ken, as yourself and Reg and Peter, everybody doesn't want to be back in a situation that we were in April and May.
Okay, well said, Declan. And hopefully we'll get you back on next week and we can tell us all about what's happening in the world of GAA hurling and football. That's Declan Drake. We're going to be taking a little break and then we're going to come back with Alan Cawley, and I'm sure he's got many stories about the great Jack Charlton as well today. A sad day for us all here in the studio. We were going to be talking about Packy's great save and David O'Leary's penalty. But unfortunately, poor old Jack Charlton. A great hero to many of us here on our island, who gave us so much inspiration from 88 to 90 to 94. What a hero, what a man, has sadly passed away today, aged 85. We'll be back after this.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reddy Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
He's coming back from an offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long! Just be turning into a great night.
A very good morning. Welcome back to Dublin's Talk and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. It's a sad morning this morning. We were all excited, as I said, getting back to you after so many months away with this COVID restrictions and stuff like that. And our great hero, Jack Charlton, who famously led Ireland in 88 in Stuttgart when Ireland beat England with that famous Ray Houghton header. In Italia 90 when we got to the quarterfinals and just narrowly lost out to the eventual champions, Italy, in the Stadio Olimpico. And of course in 1994 when we beat the Italians in the joint stadium with that famous Ray Houghton goal. Jack Charlton, the leader of the team, an inspirational leader, has died peacefully this morning at the age of 85. A very sad day for us all here who loved him and inspired a nation, without a doubt. Alan Cawley, who I'm sure got great inspiration from those teams all those years ago. Alan joins us on the line. Alan, I know you've got your own podcast, Cawley's Call, as well, but you must have some great inspirational moments and fond memories of the big man, Jack Charlton.
Yeah, absolutely, Ken. I'd echo every word that you just said there. My earliest memories, I suppose, as a football fan, were probably largely due to the Irish team and the achievements, as you say, in Euro 88, Italia 90. And not just, I suppose, what it was doing for football, but what it was doing for the country and the joyous moments. And I remember going out to watch games in the pub with your dad. And I know it's kind of different now, but you'd be down in the pub and the place would be hopping and they'd be out in the street singing and dancing. And the achievements were unbelievable. Plus, we had great players at the time as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose it was just that kind of 6 to 7 years that he was in charge, getting to major tournaments, not only getting to them as well, but actually doing really well at the tournament. Some brilliant memories, yeah, absolutely brilliant memories. It's a sad day, but he'll be remembered fondly by everyone. I was only listening to yourself this morning, reminiscing about Alex Higgins and the stories, so it'll be the exact same for all the former players now that'll be telling tales. And I saw a lovely photograph actually online on Instagram Paul McGrath put up.
And I just
looked at it and thought that's a really iconic picture when you see Paul McGrath and Jack Charlton and how great Paul McGrath was during those times, and said Jack Charlton was like a father figure to him. So it's a very sad day.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he looked after him, he reminded him and brought the best out of Paul McGrath and a lot of other good players as well, and of course had the foresight to engage and expand that grandfather and granny rule that brought so many players from England into the Irish fold as well and strengthened the team.
Yeah, absolutely, Ken. Yeah, he reached out to so many, and so many were so happy to get the call, as you said, the likes of Ray Houghton, John Aldridge and people like that, Tony Cascarino, people who have become like heroes in the country for everybody as well due to Jack getting involved. I think John Aldridge tells the story of when he was over and how they first met, that I think he was at a match going to watch Ray Houghton, and I think someone mentioned to him Aldridge might have a link as well, and he went straight over to him in the bar, like, you know. And it was like that back in them days, I suppose. So unbelievable moments, yeah. And it's funny that I suppose that obviously you only passed this morning, but throughout lockdown that we've gone through the last 3 or 4 months, all the old games and the old footage that we look back on, and all those games that were being played, and they were all memories to us, I suppose, because it was 30 years ago, Italia 90, but it was lovely to see some of those games again and relive those memories just for one more time, I suppose.
Yeah, memories of Italia 90 as well. I mean, you know, the games, and particularly, and unfortunately, was the last game, the Italian game, but, I mean, even the games up to that quarter-final in 1990, there was something else.
Yeah, unbelievable. And the penalty shootout, I'll never forget the penalty shootout, you know.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. It really was. And I know it probably, even though people think it ended sadly, it probably didn't, Ken, because they went out with their heads held high, really.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And Italy were obviously the host nation and a brilliant team as well. I know people might think it was a mistake to cost us in Scalacci, and everybody remembers that goal, but they played so well throughout that tournament, you know. They really did. Mm. Obviously, 94 then as well, the World Cup was amazing in America, and that brilliant goal against the Italians, Ray Houghton. Like, and these moments are they're there forever, Ken, you know.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
there forever.
Well, I went to America in 1994, and I was in the Giant Stadium that fateful day. And of course, you know, everybody is expecting, being in New York, you know, the place has got to be a sea of blue, you know, with all the Italians. And it was a sea of green, white and orange. And it was only a small little section of Italians there. I mean, the Irish completely took it over. And the team
without a doubt, were inspired by the crowd that day. It was one of those great days and great moments in Irish sport.
And I think that's important to remember as well, Ken. It was the connection that he almost brought to the people. Mm. Nowadays, you look at modern day football, and I often think a lot of the players, they're aloof to the everyday world and what goes on, and the fans, that there's a bit of a disconnect. But back then, there was such a connection with the fans, because Jack would just come down, and obviously everybody talks about the famous fishing trips down in Mayo and Ballinan places. He'd go into little country pubs or local pubs and speak to people and all. But there was a massive connection. And I suppose people talk nowadays about fans travelling all over and the Irish fans being great and everywhere we go. They were that was the very, very start of it, really, I suppose, in Italian 19. As you say, carried on into America and taken over places when we went there. It was just incredible.
Yeah, and all those famous checks that he once signed, you know, in pubs and all, they'd be great collector's items now. They'd be going on eBay. They'd be going for fortunes, you know. Peter, you want to say something?
Yeah, Alan, it's an interesting one with Jack Charlton, because he's had we've had very few international managers over the last 40 years, you know, Owen Hand and obviously Jack, Mick McCarthy twice, Steve Staunton, Trapattoni, but he was the first real cult of manager to come in, wasn't he, and obviously make that kind of a mark and make that kind of a resonance. Did you have any dealings with him yourself? And I suppose the other part of the question is, Stephen Kenny now will be very much driven by the high performance ethic, but he's building on the success of people like Jack Charlton and the heritage that he helped hone back in that day.
Yeah, well, Ken, I started the intro there, Peter, talking about inspirational stuff, and I'm sure it was the exact same for Stephen Kenny. It would have been Jack Charlton who might have inspired him as a young man to go on and maybe manage at a local level maybe, and then go on League of Ireland level, whatever, and eventually one day have a dream of managing the national team. And I think with Stephen back in charge now, his press conference was during the week, he spoke really, really well. A lot of those things that I mentioned about having a connection with the people and the fans, Stephen will certainly look to emulate and bring that back. And hopefully there's good times around the corner for Irish football, because not only with Stephen going in now, the underage teams are beginning to do very well in tournaments as well. It looks like there's an environment being created up there now in Abbottstown amongst all the underage sections, and with Stephen at the helm, that we can all kind of flourish. And hopefully we can, because we would love to be going to major tournaments and having some of those memories that I suppose we had as kids, to be able to show our kids now going to tournaments and doing so well. I was luckily enough to go over to the Euros there, and it's just amazing. Like, I had never been at a major tournament before as a fan, and it's just incredible when you go away and you see the fans. It is memories that will last forever. Like Ken speaks about being in that giant stadium, and I'm sure of all the things Ken has achieved in his life and his career, that still stands out as an unbelievable memory to have, to be at that match. Like,
Congrats on the podcast, and long may it last. But just tell me this much: you're on the ground talking League of Ireland stuff. How are the clubs reacting to all of this and trying to get back to a bit of normality? And are you worried about it? Is it going to get back, or is it going to get held up again? Or
It's been hard, Reggie. Yeah. It's been really, really hard. It's had such a knock-on effect for everybody, particularly the League of Ireland clubs, you know, because, as you well know, and we discuss it a lot, they're fighting fires at the best of times, never mind when you have a global pandemic. So it's been very, very hard. It's been frustrating, because it's been a long time trying to get them back. We're the last European League, Summer League, to get back and have a date for resuming the league. But thankfully we have a date now, and everything seems to be in place that we'll be starting back on the 31st of July. And hopefully everything goes well. And to be fair, I think you look at all the other leagues around the world that have gone back, they seem to have performed very well in terms of how they've dealt with everything, all the protocols, all like that. Everything's gone off without a hitch. Hopefully our league is no different, and I expect it to be as well, because the clubs need to get back. Like, there was talk there maybe that some of the clubs not wanting to play. I think that would be an absolute disaster, Reggie, because if you think it's bad trying to come back after 4 months of a lockdown, imagine trying to come back after 14 months. I think it would have been a bridge too far for some clubs just to have to leave until next season.
Yeah, it will be indeed. And we'll talk about your podcast, Alan, in due time. And we'll talk about, of course, the Premiership and all. We'll get you back on next week, you know. But as we said, we would just want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us this morning. And, you know, finish off with the big man's word. It's a very sad morning this morning. Jack Charlton has passed away at the age of 85. He's a hero to us all here in Ireland, and as he used to say very famously, we'll put him under pressure.
We've qualified for the World Cup. Go and compete.
aggressive, winning the ball, getting on with the play, we'll put them under pressure.